and do it right or do the topic justice.
You write, in America after the end of Roe v. Wade, one brave source on the record in the final story will often be the best we can get. And you write, countless abortion stories will never be told at all. It won't be because they're lies. It will be because telling them is too risky, because patients and doctors and staffers and volunteers will face arrest for coming forward. Your final recommendations and advice as the editor of the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard University.
Okay, so I would definitely, I would ask people to think about what they want to do in their stories, and if the point of journalism is to sort of shine a light on untold stories, you need to be thinking how you're going to be doing that at a time when the people who are receiving abortions that you're writing about are going to be doing something that's illegal in their states. And so you need to come into it with the thought that a lot of these people are not going to want to talk to you. Are not going to want to talk to you. And you sort of need to think about are not going to want to put their names on the record because they're going to be breaking the law. And you're going to need to think about how to tell their stories in a way that's fair and accurate, and how you can do that at a time when you are now writing about something that's going to be illegal in many states.
And of course, the question is, will journalists be considered aiding and abetting if they give information about how people can get abortion in, for example, neighboring states? Laura Hazard-Owen, we want to thank you for being with us. Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard University. You're the editor. We'll link to your piece. I'm Amy Goodman.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
Have you been thinking about furthering your involvement with KBOO? The annual election is coming up in September, and that means the board of directors are recruiting for new members. The nominating committee will hold virtual informational sessions on Wednesday, July 20th at 7 p.m. and Tuesday, July 26th at 5:30 p.m. For more information and to obtain a meeting link, go to kboo.fm/boardinfo. That's kboo.fm/boardinfo.
Today is the 18th day in July, the year 2022, as we continue to experience the decline of the planet, thanks to climate change.
Oh, God! No! I don't want to start the day with that.
Well, it's like going to be 40 degrees Celsius in England today, which is like 104 degrees, and Senator from West Virginia continued to play the administration and the Democrats by teasing them that he might possibly do something for climate change and then, pull away at the last moment. It's sort of like, don't you get it now? The guy's just just trying to fool you and continue to do it over and over again. What is it, the saying that, you know, when you do something over and over again, it's evidence of not awareness.
Of insanity?
Insanity.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We have a classic tale of that happening. And the classic tale is Lucy Van Pelt.
Excellent.
And Charlie Brown. Yes. With the football.
Every year.
So, you know, I that speaks to human behavior, human consciousness, our so-called secular morality, all of that. You know, it is like, people. And Charlie Brown wants to be trusting and believe in the goodness of Lucy. And Lucy wants to believe that she is the queen of every doggone thing. So, you know, for him to keep getting fooled, what's that other saying, fool me once?
It's a fool we...
Yeah, it's you. Fool me twice, it's me.
Me, yeah. Yeah, so those of you who were able to listen live on this, the 18th of July, before this program... we heard, of course, of Democracy Now!, and in that news program, Bill McKibben was interviewed, and he did some reflection, and I think it was sobering, as always, but I think it leads into possibly some things we would like to talk about today. But, you know, we haven't talk about who we are and where we are. Who are you? I know this is an existential question, but, you know, try to keep it simple. Who are you?
Who am I?
Yeah.
I'm your co-host, Celeste Carey. This is More Talk Radio, our talk show where we talk about everything. And the radio station transmitting us is your community connection, KBOO. Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area. If you're point south, like in Corvallis, Albany, in the Willamette Valley, it's 104.3, 91.9 if you're in the Columbia River Gorge, and if you're anywhere else in the world, you can find us at kboo.fm. Yeah. What? Who are you?
I am Cecil Prescott, and yes, we are broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, and thank you so much for joining us and being a part of this program. We'll give you an opportunity in a few minutes after we describe the parameters of our discussions this morning, but for your information, our phone number is Airroom Phone, is 503-231-8187. So put that down, save it, put it on your phone or on a post-it paper where you can find it. And we would welcome your wisdom as you share with us today. Yesterday.
Well, this is kind of a somber topic today, and then we always have an extra one in the hopper. So recently, one of my friends has experienced a number of deaths in the family, and I also had a friend pass this weekend, and almost lost another one. And Cecil and I were talking about it, and I was telling him, you know, I'm not that old in some way of reckoning, but I'm getting up there. And I often think about, you know, the dwindling numbers of my cohort. And by cohort, I mean, you know, the people that I've moved through life with. And they're of varying ages, of course, but basically, I'm talking about some of those friends who are right around my age group within, oh, I guess I'd say 10 years on either side. 10 years on either side, I'm not quite as old as my father was when he passed, but I'm much older than my mom. But, you know, you start looking at some of your close associates that you've known over time, and you when you see them going and transcending, you recognize that, well, everything does change, for one, and people leave your life, and how do you feel about it? How does society teach us to address it? How does society twist the idea of death? And how do we as a social being explain both to ourselves and each other the death of people in our lives? How do we process it? And as I was talking to him, I was saying, well, you know, it's kind of scary in a way, because American culture is not the best at addressing death. We chase youth with a vengeance. You know, youth is like some form of crack to our consciousness, because we want to be young and vital all of our lives. And if it comes about with a measure of grace and not too much surgery, you know, you feel good about yourself, especially if you're trying to keep in good shape, you know. But we know that even exercise and medication and all that is no prevention. It's a delay at best. And I was telling him how, on one hand, death doesn't really faze me. I don't know. It must be just the way I'm wired, because working as a nurse, I dealt with death. I had patients who died on me, and I was able to like be there for them and keep them accompanied and comfortable. I did hospice care on best friend. I did hospice on my dad, and I was there. You know, he was there when I came in, so I felt it was fitting. And it's like I am some type of sacred attendant, I guess, because it just doesn't wear me out until after they pass, and then I'm sad. So I want to talk about how American culture processes death with their ideas that, you know, youth is paramount, getting old is not necessarily a good thing. But that's not the only thing about death. You know, we talked about the commodification and the commercialization of death, and how if you go to prepare someone, you know, to bury them, it is very expensive. And, you know, even things like embalming, while it seems like it's natural, once I found out here in Oregon it wasn't required, at least it wasn't when I buried my father, I thought, well, I'm going to make this a natural thing, you know. And I just wonder how people are processing the fact that so many elements of your passing have been commodified. You don't have to be embalmed, which really doesn't do anything except prolong the body's It delays the body's breakdown.
Decomposition.
Well, I was trying to avoid that.
See, that's part of the challenge. We want to avoid talking about it and use language that is frank and honest. And as you suggested,
that's right.
Our Western culture is very much death-denying, and so much... One thing you said in your introduction, Celeste, you were talking about, you know, medical care, and you said something mm-hmm. such as, you know, medical care and and not too much surgery is okay. But, you know, part of this youth fascination is that we want surgery, not only, you know, to prevent disease, but also to make us imagine that we are youthful. So, you know, some of the highest paid physicians are those who try to treat us to create images of what we think we might look like if we resist the aging process. So plastic surgery is very profitable industry as well. So we would like to talk about death and ask you, is it something you've thought about? Is it something you are prepared about? And as Celeste suggested in terms of her circle, is it something that you encounter? And what does that mean? Celeste mentioned her experience doing hospice, and at some point we might want to talk to people who accompany those who are dying, death doulas, people who journey with those who are entering the next phase
of the, life,
of existence, of being, yeah. Of being.
Mm-hmm.
Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Are you comfortable talking about death? Are you preparing for death? What is it that you do with your friends and family? Yesterday, I had an experience which I think embody the full experience of life. So yesterday afternoon, I was in a park with a picnic with family and children running around and playing on the playground and doing games with one another, full of life and existence. I'd left that experience and went to a gathering of those who were a little bit older. Well, no, quite a bit older.
Than, yeah, I was about to say, great conversation now.
Quite a bit honor, who were remembering the 30 years ago here in Oregon, we had this great, major anti-gay ballot initiative. And so it was a gathering of those who fought that initiative successfully, the No or Non Remembrance. And it was 30 years, and one of the reasons I wanted to go there was to see people I hadn't seen in decades, literally, and see how we've aged. And how are we comfortable with that? It occurs to me, am I comfortable with that? How am I experiencing being older? How are you experiencing being older? Is it what you thought it would be like?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Well, you know, except for this health condition I'm dealing with right now, it kind of is, as if COVID threw me a loop. But not only am I trying to deal with some, you know, long COVID problems, but I gained a little piece of weight here. But I mean, for me, I in terms of mobility, I got a little less going on right now than I would like to. But I mean, I don't feel any older in my head, and I still feel like I'm, in some ways, I still feel like I'm 17 or 30, 35 usually. And so I still have kind of a youthful, goofy outlook on life, you know. It doesn't bother me. I forget sometimes that I'm getting that close to 70. But by the same token, as elements of society, you know, change, I feel the aging effect of that, where ideas or values or, you know, other aspects of life that I may hold or consider old-fashioned or obsolete. And I just kind of smile and I just think, well, you know, depending on what day it is, you know, in about 20 years, it'll be the style again. Yeah. You know, but I'm really good with it. It doesn't bother me. You know, I know nothing lasts forever. Everything changes, but change. Now, I tell you one thing that I do have, though, is I don't have a fear of death. I mean, I don't want to die quickly. You know, not today, not tomorrow, not next week, et cetera. But by the same token, you know, I measured everything. And did I do most of what I came here to do, what I've been, you know, I feel that I was put here to do? So I may not have the common idea of it. And I'm not afraid of it, which was I was able to do hospice on my father, you know.
Yes.
I often think about being, as you said, a death doula, because I got an easygoing attitude about it. But I know I'm not necessarily the norm. And, you know, when we have weird and convoluted ideas about death, and then we have this commodification and consumer commercialization about all the elements of death, buy the best casket you can, buy this fancy plot, get all these things and bells and whistles, and it's like, I'm gone. Okay.
Well,
so
yes.
Let's give the phone number and start the conversation there.
Well, we
the number is 503-231-8187.
Let's go to Vince, who's been waiting. Good morning.
Good morning.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are.
I didn't hear my name. I heard something else. But good morning, Cecil and Celeste. I'm glad that you're on the air. I'm glad to be in this program. God bless you both. I have been to funerals in three different countries. So I have a couple thoughts about funerary rites and things like that. First of all, I think it's important to respect your ancestors, respect your family members who have gone, and those of your friends. A friend of mine in Taiwan, his father passed. Invited me to the funeral. I wasn't able to make it, but I accompanied him to the local temple where they had him. And it's my first time to see a place like this. We're talking about Chinese people. Some Chinese have there's a graveyard on the hill, and some people have their loved ones inside of a temple. So this is what happened with his father. We show up and he guides me, and there's like a wall of tiny wallet-sized photographs of people's faces and their names in little boxes. So he said, "This is my dad. This is where we're keeping him." Okay. I don't know what's inside. I think it's only ashes. It might be ashes and bone. And I'd like to mention that there are some Buddhists in Thailand, Taiwan, and other places who have a holiday once a year. Taiwan, they call it Peacekeeping Day, where you clean the grave of your relative, and if they have remains, you take them out of their coffin and you physically clean the bone. Mm-hmm. So it's an act of respect to your elders. In my own family's case, my grandfather passed away, my grandmother passed away. I went to my grandfather's funeral. I wasn't able to get to my grandmother's funeral. This is many decades ago, and I still feel upset that I can't visit anything because they took their ashes and spread them over a river or a tree or something in Nevada, or not Nevada, Nebraska. And I would very much like to be able to even just visit that place and pay my respects, but I would much rather be able to go to a gravestone and put flowers. And when it comes to my own aging mother, getting up there, I haven't talked to her about that. I feel like it's okay topic to talk about, but I'm a little bit apprehensive, let's say.
Yes, yes.
What makes you apprehensive? Is it because you don't want to unnerve her, or you don't want to unnerve yourself, or something else?
I think it's a little all of that. You know, I love my mother. I can't stand to think about losing her. So I would be afraid if I brought up the subject, maybe I wouldn't be able to control my emotions. I think, but I think it's a needed conversation. Maybe, you know, my sister and I will try to work out. We can support each other. Somebody cries, and then the other person can stay there or something like that. But yeah, like my mother is in her 80s and she's going strong, but life doesn't last forever. And there's a time for all of us to be called. So I think we have to have that talk.
Well, thank you so much.
You know, you said something that was really interesting, and I want to comment on that before you go. Yes. And that is, you may not be able to control your emotions. Now, me personally, that would strengthen the relationship between us, because as your mom, I would be moved to know that you care about me that much. You know, parents and children who love each other often worry if they said it enough, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that would be a touching moment for me. But I know I'm not like everybody, and I'm not going to say that, you know, that that's a good thing. I just want to say, but for me, it would be a good thing. And depending on how you share emotions in your family, it may not be as frightening as you think.
I'm going to think about that. I appreciate that.
But thank you for sharing. I really appreciate it. You know, and long life to you and your mother.
Thank you very much. And to you all both.
Thank you.
Okay.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. We're talking about death, something that we will all experience if we haven't already. Whoa. Okay. Our numbers, again, is 503-231-8187, and we will go to Joan, I believe. Good morning.
Good morning, Joan.
Good morning. Good morning. I have a little story about old age. I attend, and this will lead into it, I think. I attended a little event some years ago. It was an event run by an organization called Colored Pencils, and it has to do with immigrants, and there was an art show and so on and so forth, people from all over the world, and I thought I would attend. So I walked in, and I was greeted by people and treated like a guest of honor. It was very strange. I didn't know anyone there, and I'm a white person. I mean, I'm not an immigrant. And I was offered a cup of tea, and please sit down, and what can we do for you, and here's a plate of food, and oh, we're so glad to see you, and so on and so forth. And I thought they had me confused with someone else, because I just walked in off the street to see the art. And later, I had occasion to walk into the restroom. I looked in the mirror and saw my gray hair, and I thought, that's it.
Uh-huh.
I'm an elder, and these people, who were mostly from the Pacific Islands and Asia, were treating me like an honored older person. Welcome to our event. We're pleased to see you. Please come in. And that was rather stunning to me. I must say I liked it. And I understood that. It's my own culture is not exactly that way, but kind of similar. And you know, what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with being an older person. And I think the experience of having experience is really worth something and should be looked at. And yes, we see each other pass, and yes, that's a little unnerving. But my culture, which is Jewish, does have very definite rituals and ways to deal with it. Also in Oregon, we have death with dignity. That's very important.
Yes.
And other things in our politics are affected by this fear of death, including this very bizarre thing that's going on right now with abortion, where we are taught that life is precious and death is part of life. And we have to honor all of this and recognize that we're human beings. And I once heard a Buddhist teacher, someone was asking him, how do we prepare for death? And he said, well, you make out your will. That's what you do. And I've certainly sat with people who are dying, and that's one of the things that's done. And I think a lot of cultures have rituals for these things, and the rituals are there for a reason.
Yes.
And we're supposed to have the feelings that we have, and then the dead person is supposed to be treated with great respect. And in my culture, we do not embalm people. And there's this thing about green burial where, yes, the body decays, And I believe in certain forms of Buddhism, you're supposed to meditate on the fact that the body decays, because it gives you a different perspective on your own ego and your own importance and your own, the way you fit into the circle of life. And that, you know, what does life mean? And what does it mean that if things are temporary? And when it gets into this kind of commercial weirdness, I think we all have to avoid that, because it's sending us into a direction which is not only the opposite of everything we think of that's spiritual, it doesn't make any sense on a practical basis either. We have to resist having our perceptions distorted by things that are meant to sell us stuff and scare us.
Yes.
I mean, and in America right now, with all the violence going on, we really do have a weird thing about death and what that means and what killing means and what birthing means and what helping people through transitions mean and what compassion means and all of that stuff. We're, you know, we're fragile and people don't like to look at that.
Right.
So I guess it leads to a lot of stuff that I didn't think I was going to mention, but I was really... There are classes and things that people can attend, like those death cafes, where, you know, it's about time we talk about this stuff and turn the whole thing around. You know, we live, we die. I mean, I guess I don't have to give a talk on this, but I was really impressed and rather greatly moved by the way I was treated as an older person. And there's nothing wrong with being an older person. It's like, hello, I've lived long enough to learn a few things.
Yes.
So we need to respect each other at all the different stages of life.
And you know,
to pretend we're not is crazy, you know. So anyway, that's what I had to say. And thank you so much for bringing up all the important and wonderful topics that you do bring up.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much for calling.
You are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in the gorge, 104.3 in the valley, and KBOO.FM in the ether on the World Wide Web. You know, I do want to say this, because I've got millennial friends who are grappling with the fact that there's different pressures, powers, et cetera, effects that bear down on them. And I've got millennial friends who said they didn't think they would live as long as they have. And I've got Zoomer friends that are worried because they live in a more violent world, not just violence from crime, you know, what is it? We have shootings here, but I mean mass weather events, you know, earth and natural disasters, and so they have a feeling of a tenuous life that the closest I think boomers would be was the very old generation. I said that wrong, y'all. Don't get mad at me. But our more senior generation of boomers went through the Cold War, you know, and worried about bombs. And so everybody has reason to be concerned about that. You know, Cecil and I share in common a friend who was younger than us with that. And so it's a matter of us realizing that death crouches at everybody's door, and you need to come to some kind of agreement that you're going to be able to meet this with all the dignity and strength that you have, and have a death that you know that is peaceful to you and one that you deserve. Let's go to our next caller, Camillo.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to share about the death of my 99-year-old mother on July 6th.
Oh
my. Okay.
And
99 is a good life. Yes.
Yeah, I think I can agree with you about that. She did have a very good life. And I was blessed with the responsibility of caring for her in her last 10, 11 years of life. when she came here from New York, she was in fairly good spirits and mental capacity, but it was clear that she had been declining for several years. She hadn't been able to take care of herself as independently as she was accustomed to. And when we got here to Portland, she moved in with me, and we managed that for about 5 months. But it was very difficult because, you know, we were both independent and hadn't lived together, both mature adults. So she went into independent living and managed that for about 3 years or so, and then had to go into assisted living.
Mm-hmm.
And for the past 6 months, she'd been in memory care at the Courtyard. And that actually was a good experience for her, because the care that she got in memory care was much more attentive, and she really blossomed. Unfortunately, on the night of June 4th, I think it was, she had a bad fall, hit her head, had numerous skull fractures, a laceration. And we learned early in the morning, this occurred around 4 o'clock a.m., that the CT scans showed that she had a bleed in her brain, subdural and subarachnoid hematomas both.
Now, did she have this prior to the fall, or was this the result?
Did she have what prior to the fall?
The bleed.
No, the bleed was the result of the fall.
Okay, the reason I'm asking is because I didn't know if she had had a stroke or not, you know.
No, she didn't have a stroke. She was incredibly healthy. The only pill that she took was vitamin D. She didn't even need an aspirin for a headache. She was very fortunate, and we were blessed in that way. So in the hospital, of course, they said it's unlikely that she's going to recover. But then the following day, she rallied, and the doctor changed his prognosis and thought that, well, you know, we'll just have to see how the bleed resolves. But then she continued to decline after that, and she was in the hospital for about 2 weeks. And we were concerned about where she could go, whether she'd be able to go back to memory care, because she you know, wasn't as independent and able to care for herself that she had been. And they said that if we put her in hospice, then she could come back, hospice care. And that was a good arrangement. And we had the initial admission interview by the hospice nurse. And I was still hoping that she might improve. And I asked the hospice nurse, are there any goals that we should be thinking about that might see, where we might see some improvement? And she told me, we don't do that. We just do palliation, pain relief, and comfort. And at that point, I realized, oh, she is dying. And I accepted that. And she lasted for another week. And for the majority of the time, my sister and I visited every day. She seemed to be like she was in fairly good spirits. She was responsive. She smiled. She could recognize us, say a few words. And then in the last couple of days, when she was in active dying, you could see that she was restless. And she died at night, 4 a.m. And I think that considering all the events that happened, we had a relatively smooth experience of her death. It was certainly time for her to die, although not by such an unlikely, unwelcome means. But I think about it in terms of what is the meaning of this? What is the fact that she died in this way at this time? How should I view it? And my sister and I are both Buddhists, and we're really prepared for death. And my take on it is that it was a fortuitous, beneficial event, because I'm sure when she struck her head, she went unconscious, and then when she woke up, she was demented at that point, and she couldn't remember anything. She didn't know what had happened to her. So I feel like we were fortunate in a way that if she had lived another 5 or 6 years, she might have had a lot of deterioration, degeneration that would have been unpleasant for all of us. But this way she went with her family around, and the last person who saw her was a friend of the family about 6 p.m. and said, "Gloria, you can let go. We're all doing okay. It's okay if you pass on." And she did in the middle of the night, and I think it was probably a restful death. And you know, people say they're sorry about your loss. It's really not a loss. We had a full experience, a full life. I was able to care for her, and I think that was a blessing for me. And I don't have any sad feelings or any regret or remorse or anything like that. I'm really satisfied, and can't say that I'm content, but I don't think it could have gone any better than it did.
Thank you, Camilo, for allowing us to hear, and for you sharing your story about your mother and her last days. Thank you for opening it up and allowing us to hear.
Sure.
Well, I want to say I really appreciate and respect something that you said, and that was you cared for her before all of this. And that, I think, speaks to one of the ways in which we can process death in a more positive manner when we're engaged with the people we love and we're caring for them. And I, you know, because I brought my father here to look after him. My siblings had done their part. It was my turn, and I was in the best position. And so from 97 to 2003, I took care of him. And that was some of the richest times that we had. And don't get me wrong, I was a daddy's girl. And, you know, I loved doing whatever he was doing. And I felt like this was my way of showing him how much I appreciated him being there, you know, to watch me play sports or stuff, you know, taking me to the hospital or, you know, teaching me how to ride a bike. And all of that plays into, I think, our ability to process the death when we've been able to engage with the person in a meaningful fashion before they pass. And, you know, I hope everybody is able to do that. And it sounds like that was really rewarding for you, your sibling, and your mother.
Yeah, I know for many, having an elderly person to care for is a burden.
Yes,
but for me, it was really a pleasure. The very last night that I saw her, before the accident, that is, she was at my house, and I had made shrimp fried rice for her, and she didn't always eat everything, but that night she ate it all. I knew she was pleased. And then we watched the film and we talked about it, and I took her back to memory care, and I mean, that was just an example of how we got along, and it was actually a tremendous improvement from the way that we got along in life, because we really were never that close earlier on, but we got much closer toward the end.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for sharing.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO FM 90.7. Our phone numbers are 503-231-8187. We're talking about death, how we experience it, how we deal with it. A couple of thoughts that come to my mind. One is I appreciate Camilla speaking, and before that Joan speaking, because I think one of the challenges we avoid is facing, in this culture, Western culture, confronting death and how we feel. So I think it's important for us to create space to share, to feel comfortable sharing or not sharing, to allow ourselves to experience all that we are feeling. And so our death-denying culture is one in which prevents us from being honest with ourselves. And part of our hope this morning is to continue that process for all of us, to create spaces where people are free and comfortable to speak and share of their journeys. A couple of other things.
Well, and that should be an intergenerational conversation.
A couple of other things, Celeste, before...
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Before you conclude, is that there are a couple of things that people shared this morning that I think it is important to acknowledge. One, Joan mentioned her experience of being older and of being... in the presence of those who honor those who were elders. And I think that is something that we need to embrace, those who are older. You know, quite frankly, one of the things that I don't know whether it's enjoy or not, is whenever I pass, it's mostly encounter, well, what I think are young. There might be, you know, middle-aged by some counts, but younger black men who approach me and address me as and call me OG, which is you know, it's so enriching for me to experience that, because it's the acknowledgement of my experience and what it means to be part of the community. And I think
it says that you're still vital.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It does. So I think it's important for us to experience that and to experience community. You know, it just occurred to me as Camilo was speaking and about his journey with his mother, and Celeste mentioned caring for her father, and tomorrow, in fact, is the anniversary of my mom's death. And like Camilo, my mom came out from New York to live with me last few years of her life. And it was enriching, and it was a great opportunity for us to be together. So I embraced that and embraced journeying with her on her last days. But while we are sharing all these stories that we've heard this morning about the good death and those processes, part of death and dying isn't always pleasant. And I'm thinking of those who die alone, for those who are victims of violent death, for those who die too young, for children, for people who don't have decent health care, and for those who experience the horror of human existence. That's part
such
of our journey.
War.
Yeah, mm-hmm. War and combat, gun violence. And that's part of this as well. So I'm not sure how we can discuss it, but I don't want myself to fall into what I think is part of our culture habit of covering over the ugly side of human existence by saying, oh, we'll close our eyes and we'll, you know, we all want a good death. That isn't always the case. And for many people, that's not the case. How do we deal with that? Go ahead, Celeste.
I'd say that's one reason why I feel like these discussions should be multi-generational, because I don't want to ignore younger people's fears of death. And I'm not just talking about millennials or Zoomers. I'm talking about young kids, you know, and by kids, I mean somebody, you know, 5 up to 25, which includes the Zoomers, of course, because like I said earlier, they live in a different world where death sometimes is glorified, and horrible death or pointless death be the result of some death-defying acts because they don't know how to process their humanity, you know? And I think of things like some of the TikTok challenges that have resulted in death of younger people, or gun violence where somebody accidentally gets a gun or somebody purposely gets a gun, or I have lost the other one. But, you know, the fact is that young people are concerned about death. Oh, I know one thing that scares people is death from climate change-related issues. When you look at some of the countries, like I think our Marshall Islands and what have you, these are people who are struggling with their very real fear of existence. The land they live on could either be submerged or disappear. And we don't talk about death as we should, so that people don't do some of these death-defying acts because they either are unaware of their fragility or they're not quite mature enough to understand the gift of life.
Okay. Let's continue our discussion. Thank you, Celeste. We have a couple of people on hold, so let's go to Molly. Molly, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Cecil, good morning. Celeste, I've been listening to what you've both been saying. Cecil, your thing about just the horrible deaths that happened to so many people and so much death in our, obviously, in our culture and in our world right now with, you know, everything, the mass shootings, Ukraine and all that. And Celeste, what you said, and especially you started out by saying, talking about how you really weren't afraid of death, and I didn't realize you worked as a nurse and worked with people who have been at a bedside of a friend dying and all that. So death is a huge subject. I applaud you for even taking it on. And I just want to be brief in my response to your topic. I agree, Celeste, on what you said. I was at my father's bedside, and he died very beautifully, and I thought, I'm not afraid of death. Look at the grace that my wonderful father died in, such grace. Just 2 mornings ago, I walked out into my garden. I have a giant lily that's blooming and it's above my head, and it was just getting light, and I looked up and tears sprang into my eyes because I thought, this world is so beautiful. The garden is such a delight despite all the horror of the world. And I just had a moment where I mourned leaving this world, where I wouldn't see a beautiful flower like that in a beautiful summer like we're having right now, and how beautiful it is to be alive and not to be afraid of death. But let's face it, everyone that we love who dies, we cry usually, at least I do, and it's incredibly sad, and I still miss the people that I really love, like my dad and Richie Havens and people that made the world a better place just because they were here. And I'm not really afraid of death, but I just want to live as long as I possibly can. I'm older than you, Celeste, because I've reached the big 70. So I am aware that, and I consider myself now an elder instead of checking out all the cute guys or whatever.
I feel you.
A big change, and I don't think any of us ever expected. I'm older today than I've ever been in my life, and it keeps happening every day. I'm a day older. And it's a little bit hard to take because, you know, it's not quite the same being older and watching people you love looking older and that are the same age as you.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm going on. I just want to say that it's like a cosmic joke to die. It's too bad that we have this beautiful life and we all have to die. It's just sad. It's very sad.
Well, I would say this, Molly. If we focus on the beauty at least a few times a day,
right,
and just feel that richness, just think of that stored up in your mind like you get a late season apple and you bite it and it's so sweet and mellow. Let it be just like that.
It's just like that. As if each day is the last day of your life, celebrate it like there's no tomorrow and rage against the dying of the light.
That's right. And embrace your friends and loved ones.
Right. Well, I love both of you guys. Keep up this great show. Thanks.
Thank All right. You. And that Bye-bye. Was Dylan Thomas, wasn't it?
Right.
All right. Let's go to Boris before we run out of time. Good morning.
Good morning. Interesting show. There's not enough time to delineate everything that I really wanted to get into, but I wanted to relate briefly that I took care of my mother for the last 12 years of her life, and I was pretty much full time. She wanted to be at home, and so we made that happen. I was pretty much the sole caretaker, and it was grueling for sure. At times people don't understand what's involved until you actually have to do it. But the singular message that I want to relate is that unfortunately I know her much better now than I did when she was alive, and that's very unfortunate. I think it's a result of the culture that we live in, and I just want people that hear this to make the most of the time that they have with their parents while they are still alive, because it's so sad that now that she's gone, I really understand what an interesting person she was, and I regret that I didn't take advantage of those 12 years to really learn more about her as an individual and participate in the life that she lived.
Well, as sad as you feel, here's something I hope will help brighten your day and will help change your outlook. You were there in the end, and that counts. Do not discredit or invalidate or diminish that. That is so important. And you do still think about her, and that's the gift that you have. You know, my father died. I did hospice on him. I did not get a chance to be there for my mom. And in truth, I've never even seen her grave. I went to her funeral, though, but I had to leave before she was done. And I look back on pictures and remember conversations, and the dust falls into the low places, you know, like when we had disagreements or whatever, and it fills it up like snow, and it evens everything out. And I have this beautiful mindscape. And I know not everybody has had those beautiful moments with their parents. Maybe their parents were cruel, you know. But I would say you had that wonderful gift there at the end, and embrace that and remember that. And remember how everything has evened out with this wonderful, like snow-like filling, and made it very beautiful and glistening. You know, focus on that, because I hear in your voice the missing of her, but I also hear something of a vulnerability that says, "I gave her my love." Is that correct?
Well, I did. I did what I was capable of doing. But
the
message I want to relate is the people that still have their parents with them. If there's any way that you can really learn about them as an individual, not just as a parent, but their life as a whole, it really is sad that this culture doesn't doesn't promote that, you know, and other cultures probably do.
They do more and more, and I thank you for that message. I really do. I appreciate you sharing that, Boris.
Thank you, Boris.
Yep.
And you've been listening to More Talk Radio here on community radio station KBOO. One final thought. In my other life, I'm a clergy person, and you know, we often do lots of baptism, lots of weddings, and lots of funerals. And not so secret is that I prefer doing funerals to weddings. Weddings are a hassle. Funerals is a time where, for the most part, people are honest and being there. So I much prefer to be with the family, the loved ones, as they process death, than what is this artificial thing that happens around too many weddings. Just an observation. There's something real about funerals, about death. I think it's a reflection about life. And And I thank all of you who have made yourself vulnerable this morning to share. There's been so much wisdom and love. And be surrounded by love today and always.
Well, I want to thank you also, Cecil, because he came with me for the military honors for my father when he died. And you spoke, and I cherish those moments. I, like Cecil say, cherish the day, cherish the people in your life, make new family if you don't have anything, and consider KBOO part of your family. Support us, listen to us, be a part of us. Your Community Connection, KBOO, Portland.